Man, this conference, I've been in 21 years, I've been to as many C3 conferences as I could be to. I don't think I've missed a global conference in that time. And this has been the best one, I think. I was just messaging someone before and just saying that I feel like the sense of unity, the sense of togetherness, and the sense of future has never been greater. And I would just say, like what it says in Isaiah there, "He who has eyes to see that I'm doing a new thing," says the Lord. And this whole concept of I see is not a question of necessarily what the people on stage are seeing, but the question goes back to us in the congregation. And the question is, well, what do you see? That's the whole point. We only walk into the future that we see. And if you don't see it first when your eyes are closed, you'll never realize it when your eyes are open. And we have to see and dream together of the future that is going to unfold. And I want you to turn in your Bibles to Judges chapter 6. And we're going to use the story of Gideon here that is a challenging story to get us not to live a comfortable life, but to be a part of the mission of God that he has across the world, and C3 has an incredible part of that mission. I would argue the most incredible part. And because God is doing something, but not every Christian in every church is about what God is about. Sometimes the things we complain about, God's not complaining about. And sometimes the things we celebrate, God's not celebrating. And we need to make our prayer requests actually align with his. That's why it says, "Thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven." And we often use God to serve us, but really we should use ourselves to serve him. And I believe it's my calling in life to help initiate or help people see and align with the call of God on their lives. And I know that by the end of this message, that you will see a clearer picture into your calling, that you have a greater understanding from the voice of the Lord, and that if some of us in this room have settled, that we would unsettle ourselves to be a part of this mission of what God's doing. But if we're already unsettled, I know that there would be an unsettling in some of us, because there's amazing church leaders all across the room here, that we need to take this message home, and so that the people in our congregations would actually step in, would risk again, would believe again, would trust God again, and actually live the lives that God is calling them to. And if we can relate to Gideon, and I can relate to Gideon, because Gideon didn't feel like he was much. And I don't feel like I'm much. I come from a town in east of Melbourne called Terralgon, T-R-A-R-L-G-O-N. It's in Gippsland. It's kind of near Sale, where John Pierce grew up. And the Aboriginal name for Terralgon means the river of little fish. And, you know, I don't know if you're like me sometimes, but I feel like a little fish. I don't feel like I got much, but man, with God. And we got to see that in ourselves. And it's just so awesome to be this. And we need this family. We need these people. We need people around us that believe in us. And for the last, I've been in the movement for 21 years, and I felt celebrated, and I felt encouraged, but in the last 15 years, I've been under the ministry of Pastor Lorne and Kelly Tebbett, and I can straight up tell you that they are the greatest people believers ever. Like how they champion people, and this whole idea that the fathers before us will speak into and encourage the next generation. And I don't know if I'm allowed to call myself a spiritual father at this point, but I do want to keep passing it along. I would never say to anyone, "Hey, like, can you be my spiritual son?" I think that's kind of weird. But in my heart, I hope that God would entrust me enough for his most precious commodity, that's people. it's the saints. And so let's read it. Gideon, Judges chapter 6. "The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord." A lot of people in Toronto do evil in the eyes of the Lord. And for 7 years, he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Everybody say, bummer. Okay, because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves. So when you read this next part, you can conclude that they were living under their potential. They're in the promised land, but they're not acting like promised people. And whenever the Israelites, so they prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. They literally put themselves in strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops. Somebody say ruined. All the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock, their tents like swarms of locusts. How many people feel sometimes that the enemy is in a multitude? It was impossible to count them or their camels, you know, just in case you were counting camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Notice how they weren't stealing the fruit. They were ruining it. They were ravaging it. And Pastor Phil said just yesterday that the devil's a bully and wants to intimidate. When Goliath, he was taunting the Israelites, and it paralyzed the whole generation on a hillside. And morning and evening, we can get insecure. We can feel the intimidation of the devil that gets in the way of the way we're meant to be living. That we can live less than what God is calling us to live. And this can happen to pastors. And there has been many temptations over the last few years to feel intimidated by the circumstances around us to live less than what God is calling us to. We can all feel, fall suspect to this. I relate to Gideon. And so they're living in the promised land, but they're not living as they should. And so the Midianites, and they were so impoverished with the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. You know, it's good advice to cry out to the Lord in advance so you don't need to cry out to him after the stuff hits the fan. I love that we're a prayer movement. So when they cried out to the Lord, prophet came, verse 10, I said to you, I am the Lord your God. He was reminding them, what is the problem here? Do not worship the gods of the Amorites whose land you live in, but you didn't listen to me. So the problem wasn't the enemy, the problem was themselves. And the angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Beezrite, where the son of Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press. Now, when you thresh wheat, you're meant to do it on a hilltop. So he was doing something in another location, not the way it was meant to be, but he was threshing wheat in a wine press. So it's kind of like obscure. To keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Well, you know, if we look at Gideon in that moment, we might draw the conclusion that that's not a mighty act. It seems cowardly when you first look at it. But God calls things even though they're not as though they are. Amen. Okay. Somebody say, read on. Okay. Verse 13. Pardon me, my Lord, Gideon replied. But, okay, here's the problem. But if the Lord is with us, so he complains, why? He's perplexed, disillusioned, confused. Why has all this happened to us? This is what we were told. It's not what we pictured. Where are all the wonders of our ancestors that they told us about? Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us. So he draws a pretty hasty conclusion right there, since he's actually speaking to God, and given us into the hand of Midian. The Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have. I love that when we do all that we can do and we trust God for the rest, man, then he can do all he can do. Save Israel out of Midian's hand. And he says this, am I not sending you? And that's the title of tonight's message. The same question God is asking across all our churches. There are people in our congregations that God is calling. And we need to align with the call of God because he is sending people. And then he says, pardon me again. Pardon me, my Lord. Gideon replied, but how can I save Israel? My clan's the weakest. kind of like that dude from Traralgon, and my family's the least. And it kind of means that he doesn't feel like he's got any authority to do what he's doing. And the Lord answered, I will be with you, and you will strike down the Midianites, leaving none alive. And so what happens later, and we know the end of the story, is that Gideon and his army of 300 end up, and the conclusion of the story is that they end up defeating, and the Bible tells us there's 135,000 Midianite enemies. And with 300, they defeat this army where they had torches in clay jars, and they broke the clay jars and the torches came out and they prophesied and all the rest of it, and then they defeated the army and the Midianites turned on themselves. I mean, it's a miracle, right? And there are miracles in our future that aren't going to make sense right now. And so, and the problem is, the problem wasn't that there was a threat from the enemy. The problem, as we've already concluded, is it was polytheistic worship. It was the adoption of other gods. That God is holy and set apart and wants his people to be holy. And this is actually in the same location where God establishes his covenant with Abraham, which is the covenant to not worship any other gods. And like in Toronto, I mean, like the idols of Baal and the Asherah poles and the things that Gideon was called to pull down, we're also called to pull them down. That we're meant to establish altars unto the Lord. People of worship in places of worship that don't worship multiple things, but just worship God. But in Toronto, we have many Christians that adopt many things that they worship, including probably, arguably, the worst Asherah pole that anyone in our city worships is the Asherah pole of self. It's the God of self. It's that spirit of mammon and that spirit of meanness instead of being about God. And he is Yahweh. And we need to be monotheistic in our worship. We need to only, and this was the problem. So until Gideon dealt with it, the enemy was going to remain. And God is looking for somebody. And I believe it's somebody in this room to take ground back for the kingdom that will tear down what is not of God and will lead nations back to covenant worship with God again. That is what we're about. That is what we're about. But here's the problem. There is a spirit that's trying to meddle with your calling. There's a thief that comes to steal, kill, and destroy and distract and get in there and get you living less than how you're meant to be living, get you pastoring less than how we're meant to be pastoring, feeling a sense of circumstance and intimidation by being surrounded by things that give us enough reason to feel paralyzed. I don't know what you were believing for in coming to conference, but I know that you were believing for a word from the Lord. I don't specifically know what it is. Thank God that he does. And he's speaking right now. But if the enemy can intimidate us, C3 is not going to step into the future that God has called us to step into. So we can't let the enemy win. We can't let whatever our financial situation is be the dictator of the fruit of our future. We can't let the limitations of how we believe we're gifted or not gifted to limit us for the fruit of our future. And there is a shaking and an unsettling that we can actually discern enough to get us frustrated enough to get us out of the wine press. And I don't know what wine press you're in right now, and I can find myself in there. Most of the time it's on Monday. But we can find ourselves in and out of wine presses, and we have to get out of a place of reasoning, get out of a place of calculation, and get to a place of the impossible to continually trust God for what he has for our lives. And so point one is God is calling kingdom people to solve kingdom problems. You and I are kingdom people. And Gideon was frustrated He had a level of frustration. He didn't know what to do with it. He was trying to do something with it. And his frustration was, part of me, God. I thought when we came into the promised land, I thought it was meant to play out differently than this. And he's looking around and things are not as they should be. And you and I, when we pray to God, frustration is the birthplace of vision. When we need to get frustrated with something. Frustration is where vision begins. And when God will put his concerns on our hearts. And as we're worshiping and surrendering our lives to God, he starts to put need on and visions. And it starts with, man, this is a problem that needs to be solved. And I don't know about you, but I want to get about solving God, being a part of what God is trying to solve. There are too many I'll talk about the Western world because I live in North America, but there are too many North American pastors that are frustrated about things that God's not frustrated about. They're frustrated about their income. They're frustrated about their influence. They're frustrated about whatever status and who welcomes them into what green room and other things. And God is like, don't be concerned about your influence. Be concerned about my influence. And when you get concerned about God's influence, you won't have to worry about your influence. And I need these lessons because I need a reminder that God is trying to solve some problems around the planet. And I don't want to be praying all my prayer requests to God. And if he answers them all, that he wouldn't be answering any of his own. If God is going to answer the vision of our churches, I hope that it's his vision. David was frustrated. He was motivated with frustration. He's like, who is this uncircumcised Philistine? And it caused him to step out amongst a whole multitude of people that were paralyzed by intimidation. And so he stepped out in frustration. He's like, it shouldn't be this way. And then Nehemiah was concerned and he was frustrated. He's like, this wall is torn down. This is a place of protection for my people and somebody needs to do something about this. And I remember for me that in 2003, later that year, that I remember there was an altar call and Pastor Chris was laying hands on people on the altar call. It was when, after the 6 p.m. service at C3 SYD, but it was back then, there was a later service. There was an altar call service and Pastor Chris came and laid hands on people and just kind of laid a hand on my shoulder and I fell down in the spirit and I just got in a vision from God. And it was kind of like a crowded airport. And I was standing there and it was this, as if I was standing next to Jesus. And I didn't think or know that it was Jesus at the time, but all these people were walking by and nobody was turning or looking at or acknowledging Jesus. And then my heart started to bleed. Like what? Like this was these people need to know you. They need to have connection with you, but they weren't seeing him and they were busy about their lives. And I felt that there was a heart transplant from the heart of God to see people saved and that people needed to connect. And that's why our church's mission statement is we exist to connect people to God. And out of this revelation of frustration that there are so many people that are children of God that don't know it. And so we do an altar call after every service, a salvation altar call. We have to do it, not because I'm trying to do something, but because I'm responding from some sort of kingdom motive, a kingdom frustration. And over 8,000 people in the last 11 years in our church have given their lives to Christ. And it's awesome. And so agitation will get us moving. My watch even knows when I need to start moving. Like we need to get restless on some things. And it literally says to me that if I haven't done something for a certain period of time, it says, come on, it's time to stand. And I believe that the apple of C3 is saying, come on, church, it's time to stand. It's time to stand. Be up. Get about it. Get unsettled again. So my question to you is, what kingdom frustration do you carry? What problem do you see? We must get frustrated with the right problem. Are you frustrated that more youth aren't getting saved, that churches are getting shut down, that family health is deteriorating, that the nuclear family is under constant attack from our society? Are you frustrated that church is not financed at the level it should be? That the creative industry needs to create more kingdom messaging, that disciples must become more effective, and that biblical training and literacy is on the decline? The body has many parts, and your frustration might be different to mine, but you need to activate your willingness to step out of the wine press. You need to let the frustration on the inside of your spirit become a burden and partner with God in what he's doing. Number two, we must not let logic and reasoning stop us from obeying God. We can look at Gideon and think, man, that guy was a coward. But like, honestly, I feel like he gets a bad rap because he was doing something. He was strategic, probably a business guy. I don't know. But he had drawn a conclusion. He's like, listen, something needs to happen. There's got to be some sort of harvest, some sort of fruit. And he concluded, based on the circumstances that were surrounding him, that what I need to do is I need to position myself in a place where I can generate an element of harvest. He was threshing wheat. He was doing something while everyone else was hiding in caves. So I think Gideon is like many people in our churches that are doing something. And it's the place, I would call this like the place of human reasoning. It's a place of, we don't really have to have God in that place. Gideon, he was a man of risk. I mean, if he got caught, like it would have been bad. He was doing something. And he had work ethic. He had some sense of expectation. I'm gonna produce a harvest. It was just weird where he was doing it. And so he was trying to do something, but he was trying to do it in his own strength. And God was calling him out of it. And there have been many reasons. I mean, since the pandemic has taught us calculated risk. 6 feet apart, social distancing, sanitize everything. Be careful, protect you. But since then, there's been so many things that have bombarded senior pastors that's caused us to have some calculated risk around stress management, dealing with anxiety, for sure, balanced living, maybe overextending Sabbath. You know, God worked for 6 days, right? Threats of not being liked, like struggling economy, limited resources, or even just fear of failure. So we mitigate risk. And I felt that there was a disruption in my spirit to risk again, to step out from, you know, I had stepped out from the wine press and we planted a church, but I made another wine press. And what used to be walking on the water now feels like I'm standing in the boat again. And so I got to step out of that boat again. And he reasoned to himself, well, I'll use the wine press. But Gideon needed to trust the warrior that God was calling in him. And God is calling us to a higher level. Okay. Sometimes we don't step out because it's hard to do the math. So God's not that good at math. God's math is not our math. It's different. And this is the story of Gideon. Is that when God calls him out and he eventually says yes, that God gives Gideon an army. Well, an army steps up. And we know the story that it's 32,000 soldiers. And like 32,000 in comparison to 135,000 is still, like, they're still behind. Would you agree? Okay, so that's a 1-to-4 ratio. But God looks at it and he says, listen, this isn't good. Because you will boast and you will say in your own strength that you have saved yourself. So it's a human reasoning, a human strengthness that God needed to obliterate. And God is speaking to you right now about something to step out in, but it probably doesn't make sense. And I'm asking you to not add the reasoning around and water it down to a place of human reasoning. Let God be God. And so he says, all right, just talk to everyone that's scared and we'll refine the number. So Gideon's like, there's probably not that many people. 22,000 leave, leaving 10,000 left. And Gideon turns around, I mean, now we've got a 13-to-1 ratio. So he kind of turns around, don't worry, guys. He's like, okay, if one of you gets taken out, Don't sweat it. This is like an emergency alarm from heaven on the call of God on your life. But he's like, okay, if one of you gets taken out, it's all good. You've got 26, right? You can handle it's all good. But God's like, no, it's still not good enough. It still doesn't make me God enough in this story. And there's been, the history that we have in C3 teaches us that this is a faith movement where God has done some insane things that don't make any sense. And I know the next generation stepping into the future of what has for C3 is that we need to let God be God. We need to believe God enough for him to be God. And we need to step out in a way that keeps the story going. The price has been paid too much over the last 44 years for us to start to play it conservative. So he's like, we need to make this even more ridiculous. So he's like, okay, go and get a drink because you're probably going to be thirsty. And anyone that cups the water with their hands, okay, they're going to be in. Anyone that puts their face down to the ground, they're out. Okay, we can't tell them what to do yet, all right? So they went down and did it. Now only 300 of the 10,000 were left. I could just sense Gideon going like, dang it. And there's something just, when I was studying this passage of scripture, there's something that I feel like is remarkable about the Jezreel Valley where this happened. The ratio is 450 to 1. That's crazy. I mean, if you can fight against 450 people, you're awesome. Bass could probably do it. But 200 years later, in the same Jezreel Valley, there was a guy by the name of Elijah that was facing a 450 to 1 problem. 200 years later, I don't know. It's not in the text, but I'm just thinking that maybe Elijah, when he was sitting in the position of idol worship again, where people had turned away from Yahweh and there were false prophets speaking against the holiness of God, that maybe, just maybe, I know I'm extending the text right now, but I think it's cool that maybe that Elijah thought back to the story of Gideon and it gave him a sense of faith for the future. What the decisions that we make don't just matter for us. They matter for generations to come. I don't want people to look back over Sam Pickens' life and think, man, that guy really played it safe. Man, he mitigated risk. He was a good dude and kind of calculated his way through life. Man, he was such a good budgeter. We live for but a vapor, guys. We live for but a, I wanna we're gonna do something. We have had a couple of stories in the life of our church that we purchased a building. I think we have a photo of it. That was a crazy purchase for our church that actually happened. This one here, these two buildings side by side, this red and brown one here, that it was part of a property portfolio. You can leave the image up for a little bit if you want. Part of a property portfolio, and there was other buildings in it. And I'm just going to get the band back up while I tell this story. And so it was $13.8 million to purchase these buildings. And at the time, and this was 2021, just after like all the pandemic and stuff happened, and as we were shopping, we probably didn't even have maybe a $4 million budget. I mean, we tried to be faithful, good stewards and everything, but you know, with what we had in the bank and the lender that wanted to help us, we probably had maybe a $4 million budget to purchase a building. And so we went and looked at one of the buildings in the portfolio that wasn't in the area that God had called us to, and it was around about a $4 million building. And we're looking at it, toured it with some of our team, and Jess was there, and man, we're like, oh yeah, okay, we could do that. I don't really feel like we're meant to be here, and we're trying to reason about how this could be right. Like, you know, and so we're walking through this building, and it was more Jess, but Jess is like, we can't, like, this isn't just doesn't feel God. And so we knew about these buildings, but we had not even, the budget wasn't there. $13.4 million to $13.8 million. And so I'm praying just in my normal prayer time, and I felt God say, it's yours. Now, the crazy thing about these buildings is that the red one there in that bottom corner near that truck, there's a studio in there, which is studio number one, and this building is broken up into a whole bunch of little music rooms. And when we started as a church, we had nowhere to do corporate prayer and to rehearse our band in. But so these were rental rooms that had drum kits and stuff in them. And every single Thursday, we would pray together, whoever would show up from 7 to 8 p.m. And then we'd do worship rehearsal. And Amanda was there the whole time doing worship rehearsal from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And we did that for 5 years in that building. So we kept looking back at it because we're like, man, we baptized that building in 700 plus hours of prayer and worship. How can this building not be ours? But there was a gap. There was a problem. There was a gap. And so I was like, okay, we just need to own it. We pitched it to the board. This is going to happen. The moment that we pitched it to the board, somebody heard about it and said, hey, I know you're short of the deposit that you need in order to facilitate that purchase. How much are you short? I kind of did some really quick math in my head and I'm like, we're short $1.2 million. And that person said, I'll give it tomorrow. And I'm like, what? Okay, that's cool. The same week, another person approached us and said, hey, I want you to know that through Vision Builders, that I made a commitment, but I never handed it in because I didn't want to overpromise and underdeliver. And my commitment, I've kept it in my Bible, but I haven't, and I felt, and now I've sold this part of my business and I can actually fulfill my commitment. And it just so happened to fall on this week. And I want to, and I'm like, you don't have to tell me what it is. Like, it's all good, but yeah, what is it? And the guy's like, it's $1 million. $2.2 million came in the moment that I decided to step out of the wine press. And I want to turn to your neighbor and say, trust God. Trust God. We're in the middle of it. We've just renovated phase one and we've moved our offices in there and it's all good. The story is still unfolding. The last point, it's just a quick point. I want to say, we can't do this without God and we were never meant to. We were never meant to. Gideon argued with God and said, hey, I'm the weakest, I'm the least. And it's kind of funny that God seems to call the weakest things to do the things that require the most strength. God seems to call the least to do the things that require the most courage. And my Bible says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 and 27, that brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were from noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the strong. God chose you, the weak things of the world, to shame the strong. Just close your eyes for a second here. What is God asking you to do? You are a warrior. Might have been wine press circumstances that have taught you that now's not the time to plant that location. But there's a small voice on the inside of your spirit that's saying, hang on a second, now is the time. Well, I can't make sense of it, God. And God's like, hey, the voice is there, trust me. There are people that God is saying, hey, make the decision to step into ministry. You've been working that job and you've had that career path and you have a plan. But God is speaking to you, now is the time to step out. Now is the time to step into the ministry. And we're going to plant hundreds of churches in the years to come, thousands of churches. The need is so great. But churches don't just get started by senior pastors. In churches, I mean, there's kids teams, there's worship leaders, there's executive pastors, there's There's people that have the gift of giving to financially resource the church. There's executive assistants, connect group leaders, Bible teachers, youth pastors. I mean, when we're talking about planting hundreds of churches, we're not talking about one profile. And just because we did a church planting altar call last night, you might think, well, where's the altar call for the high-level business guys? It's now. Where's the altar call for the people that have a burden to see children grow up? Not just in some babysitting childcare on a Sunday, but raising up the next generation, the future prophets and prophetesses of the kingdom of God that are now 5 years old. And you've got that frustration that there is an education system out there in the world that seems to be increasingly more liberal, that's causing these small, absorbent minds to be contaminated with things that aren't God. And it's a frustration in you. Now is the time. Own the frustration. And I know it doesn't make sense. It's not meant to make sense. It's time we live in critical days. Why don't we just all stand to our feet right now? I don't know exactly who I'm talking to, but if you feel like that you're somebody that God is calling you to make a move, God is calling you to step out. God is calling you that there is something that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. It might be planting a church. You might not have been at the altar call yesterday because you rationalized why it's not you. It might be a call to youth ministry and raising up the next generation. You're trying to rationalize how to make ends meet. And God's like, can you leave that alone for a second? Could you listen to the call of God? Because he's saying, am I not sending you? And what I want you to do is, if you feel that now is the time to step out, now is the time to believe God again. Maybe there is pastors here and you're doing church in a safe way. And it's like, man, I needed this. I needed a reminder that I didn't start this thing in a safe way. We were never meant to do it in a safe way. And then I need to rattle the cage again in my own vision. I need to start to believe again in a way that will radicalize our story so that people will trust and believe God. That I need to make decisions for generations to come. And I need to unsettle myself. Maybe that's you. And if that's you, what we're going to do is we're going to get the regional directors activated again, and we're going to be laying hands on people and praying for people that you would see what God sees and that you would understand that God is sending you. And I know that this will be the first step of many steps of obedience that will unlock an insane story. That as this unfolds, there will be so much fruit in conferences to come. We will see and hear the stories that will result from a birthing that happened right here, right now, tonight. So if that's you, if you're like, yeah, I want to hear the voice of God. I want to see what he's seeing. I want to be burdened with a frustration from heaven. I want that to be increasing. So I trust God and risk again. I want you to leave your seat and I want you to rush to the front for some prayer right now. Come on, leave your seat.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us. If you're a pastor or a leader, we'd love to connect with you. Throughout the year, around the world, and our regional gatherings are a great opportunity for pastors to come and discover who we are as a movement. Or if you simply want to come and be refreshed and blessed, you're more than welcome. If you're interested, reach out at hello@c3churchglobal.com. That's hello@c3churchglobal.com. See you again soon.